Welcome to the Payment Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack, and on today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at why it is that U.S. merchants need to look locally to expand globally, and also how do local payment methods help to facilitate the needs of economies across the globe. So to help me with today's episode, I have Steve Vijayas, who is the VP of Partner Management and Head of the U.S. Office at PPRO. Now, this podcast recording was done at the Money 2020 event in 2019, and there's certainly a lot of things to unpack. So without any further delay, let's start the show.
So Steve, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. So for our first question here, I'd love to take a look at kind of this phrase and really what it is that it means to you at PPRO. So why do U.S. merchants need to look locally to expand globally?
Hi, Ryan. First of all, thanks again for having me. When you think about merchants expanding and what that really means from a global expansion, most U.S. merchants are very familiar with cards, right? They all accept credit cards. All of us here domiciled in the U.S. are very familiar. But when you expand and look globally, around 77% of all e-commerce is transacted with something other than a credit card. So it could be a local payment method specific to wallet or specific to a bank transfer method, or maybe a local card that's not a credit card per se, but it's associated with some type of bank network. And so if U.S. merchants are really looking to go global, even across border, right, if they're looking across to Canada or even Mexico, down in LATAM, not too far to the south of the U.S., all of those countries have some of their dominant payment method that they're using other than credit cards. And in those environments, it's going to be very important for U.S. merchants to, in order to take advantage of that marketplace and sell goods and services in that marketplace, they have to be able to accept those particular payment methods that are generally accepted by those consumers in those countries.
Wonderful. No, so thank you for that explanation. And I think it kind of sets up this next thing. As we take a look at PPRO specifically, so how has PPRO's recent expansions and acquisitions, and maybe you could shed some light on what those acquisitions are, that have helped to position the company in the global marketplace?
Sure. Just a little bit of background. PPRO is a 14-year-old company. It started out of Europe. That's where we're domiciled predominantly. But now we have offices all over the world. Certainly here in the U.S., we have a couple offices, a couple of down in LATAM, Mexico and Brazil and Colombia, as well as an office in Singapore. And we're getting ready to open up in India. So when you think about from supporting the ecosystem, what PPRO does today is we supply local payment methods. These are in various countries. Again, those payment methods that are preferred by the particular consumers in those areas. Again, it could be bank transfer methods, which are predominant in Europe, like a SoFord or a GiroPay or an Ideal or Bank Contact. Or in LATAM, it's cash-based methods like OXXO in Mexico or Boleto Bancario in Brazil. Or wallets over in Asia like Alipay and WeChat Pay, which are very dominant in the Chinese markets. But there's a ton of others that we support, and we supply those to our partners, which are mostly acquirers and PSPs that are supplying services, mostly credit card services, predominantly to merchants. But then we also connect, or they connect to us, and we provide them access to these local payment schemes. And so from a global expansion standpoint, we've continued to grow, growing offices every year, growing our footprint, adding more local payment methods. Today we have over 150, and we'll add another 40 to 50 this year. So we'll be over 200 by the end of the year, somewhere abouts. And our long-term view is that we're going to be in the top 100 countries in the dominant payment methods in each of those countries. And both global from a cross-border standpoint, as well as local from, supplying, if a merchant is domiciled in that country, supplying the local opportunity as well to connect and accept payments locally there for them. In this past year, in 2019, we made an acquisition of a company called Alpago. Alpago is domiciled predominantly focused in the LATAM market with offices, as I mentioned, Mexico and Brazil and Colombia, with expansion into Argentina and Peru, Chile. And that really gave us two things. One is it gave us direct access to a lot of the local payment methods there, as well as it gave us access to card processing in the LATAM markets. We traditionally have not done card processing as PPRO, but with this acquisition, we have inherited that and we'll continue to use those rails. And we'll look at expanding our card acceptance across the globe in various jurisdictions based upon where our partners may need or need to have access to card processing. But we'll continue to focus in on expansion this next year. India and Africa are extremely on the horizon, are extremely interesting. We see a ton coming out of India where we will connect to RuPay and through Paytm, and we'll provide our partners access to the local markets there in India and Africa. We have a relationship with M-Pesa, which is one of the first local payment or alternative payment methods that have come out of Africa and very different from anything that we've seen in the marketplace, where it's using, you know, mobile as the, you know, mobile phones as the way to interact and transact for the consumers and merchants in those regions. And so we're continuing the global expansion and look forward to supporting all of our partners with around the globe as we continue to connect these local payment schemes.
Wonderful. No, that's certainly fantastic news there. And now, you know, in the last part there, you talked a lot about the local payment methods, you know, kind of being offered by, and I'll use quotations for this, the new P-Pro, if you will, that are kind of enabled by all these acquisitions. But beyond those local payment methods that you're going to be able to offer to the market, what other solutions can we look forward to with all of these expansions and acquisitions that P-Pro has been going through?
Yeah, so because of the way that the local payment methods are built, there's a lot of opportunity for technology to be enabled and for us to enable some of that technology, where most of these payment schemes are native to their countries and may not have need or have a particular use for things like refunds, right? We think about refunds here in the card world in the U.S., e-commerce. We're used to being able to get refunds immediately, return products. That doesn't exist everywhere around the world. So if a merchant is selling goods and services in one particular country, their consumers may expect to have refunds. Some may or some may not, but it's good to have, and certainly the merchants will expect it. So we've enabled technology such as building refund capabilities in many of these payment methods that are generally not native to those payment methods. And other things like FraudWatch and other technologies allow us to look at the more specific payment methods locally. There are other elements that we will continue to look at from a technology standpoint, whether it is in looking at the types of payouts that may be done. Open banking is coming into Europe, where we will play a big part in providing access to banks. We're connected to over 2,500 banks in Europe today. So we'll use that from a technology standpoint and connectivity. And really what we look at from an enablement standpoint is we are becoming a network of networks to some degree. When you think about, on one end, we're supplying the PSPs and acquirers, the largest ones in the world, with connectivity or access to all of the local payment methods. At the same time, we're connected directly to over 150 payment methods globally, and that'll continue to expand. And as we look at every jurisdiction, so we're really servicing both sides of the equation in the e-commerce markets, and that'll continue to expand, and even looking at card present. So today we do support some card present, and it's minimal, but certainly if it's riding over an e-commerce rail, and you think about what a QR code does, so you think about Alipay and WeChat Pay, and even Ideal has a new QR code, and many of these are moving to where it may be a card-present transaction, but it's over the mobile network, right? It's a consumer walking up and scanning a QR code in order to make a payment on their phone. There's never a card presented, but it's a technology that has to be done on the back end. So those are things that we're looking at globally, and how we continue to enable those, how we continue to support those, support the ecosystem as everything, you know, eventually becomes card not present, because consumers won't be pulling cards out of their wallet. They'll be using technology that's enabled through their mobile, most likely, or, you know, could be enabled through their vehicle or some other way of providing that payment.
No, certainly very interesting there. And now for my next question, you kind of alluded to this a little bit in your last response, but I'd really like it if you could help me understand a little bit better in how do local payment methods help to facilitate the needs of economies across the globe?
Sure. When you think about what's happening in the various economies, much of certain regions still deal heavily in cash. Certainly, I don't think that's the case in most Americans. I know rarely do I have cash in my wallet. It's an occasion that's usually to because my 13-year-old son needs money. But generally speaking, even then, we have other methods of paying for things. But generally speaking, when you go around the world, many of the economies, especially when you look at second world and third world nations, are dealing heavily in cash. Sometimes it's because the banks, the local bank institutions, aren't completely trusted. Sometimes it's a generational thing where it's just a matter of, this is how we've always done things, and here we're transacting in cash. Well, you fast forward into thinking about how do you service those economies, and it becomes apparent that if you're going to sell goods and services, you have to have, you know, you want to be able to offer credit cards, but you want to also be able to look at the other local payment schemes that may be available. So I'll use Mexico as an example, where it's something over 65% of the consumers there are unbanked, and that means they're carrying around cash. Well, how do they pay for things in the e-commerce manner? Well, they use payment methods like OXXO or 7-Eleven, which you actually buy something online and then you physically walk down to your local convenience store and you pay for it in cash. You typically have a voucher or a printed receipt you're taking into that convenience store, and they're scanning the barcode, and then you are you're showing as paid. That transaction gets completed, and then likely within a couple of days or however the shipping works, you're getting your good or service that you've paid for. And then there's other local bank methods. So I talked earlier about wallets, things like Alipay and WeChat Pay. If you want to sell to a Chinese consumer, you have to be able to enable one of those methods or UnionPay as an alternative card offered in China. So those are where, you know, predominantly consumers in China are using one of those payment methods. You're not going to be able to offer them something that they're not going to be used to. And that stands for anywhere you go around the world. If you're looking at the local consumer and what their preference is, another example is iDEAL in the Netherlands. That's a local bank, local payment method that connects to the banks in the Netherlands. And all consumers are very familiar with iDEAL. The majority use that. Over 70% of e-commerce transactions are conducted using iDEAL. And so if you didn't offer iDEAL in the Netherlands, you're typically not going to maximize your sales that you might be able to. So that's certainly, when you think about those economies and you think about consumers and what their preferences are, the merchants that are selling those goods and services have to be able to enable those payment methods in order to maximize both their sales as well as to ensure that they're relevant in those economies.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I think that it's extremely interesting, right? When you particularly look at just like how increasingly complex the world of payments is coming, when you kind of take a look at that global aspect, you know, you pointed out that Mexico kind of being very cash heavy and then China with the digital and mobile focus there. But what I'm really curious to get is, given all of these different ways that people like to pay, you know, how is it that a merchant and a payment service provider can keep the customer experience simple and seamless?
Sure. I'll dovetail on what I just mentioned around thinking about global economies. The other thing I'll mention is when you think about e-commerce growth, before I jump into again the complexity, the world is continuing to become more and more card not present, and economies around the world that traditionally have been cash and traditionally have been retail focused, not e-commerce focused, that's changing. So you're seeing economies that are rapidly changing and moving into e-commerce as a larger share of the retail sales. And along with that, you're also seeing, of course, growth of e-commerce and local payments and the rise of double digits in many jurisdictions where, you know, we might be in the low digital double digits here in the U.S., but, if, you know, you have economies that are growing at 30 to 50% from the e-commerce. So I mentioned that because it certainly keeping things simple for the consumer is important, and not having them jump through hurdles because they want the same experience that they've had. And it really comes to the companies, whether it's the merchants or the PSPs that are handling those payment methods, I have to consider what that looks like. And certainly, you know, what we run into in the service that we provide is being able to enable, and PPRO enables all these payment methods through one integration. We work with one contract because we handle all the contractual elements of all the payment methods. And we also facilitate the reconciliation and payment settlement to our partners directly for all of these transactions. And so we try to simplify that because standalone, if a merchant or a PSP goes direct to all these payment methods, the amount of integration work, the amount of, you know, even upkeep, the contracts, all of those pieces, the reconciliation and settlement, if you look at those in a disparate situation, that's a ton of work. And if you're trying to then cobble together your front end that you're supplying to the merchants and whatever shopping cart they have and the manner in which they're working, it can create a lot of complexity and a lot of challenge and a lot of headache long term. And certainly payments is not going to become more simplistic. And when we talk about things moving to card not present, right? If you go to where today I walk into a store and I swipe a credit card to in the future, whether it's, you know, think about the complexity of Apple Pay, or you think about if I'm just able to go on my phone and hit an app and all of a sudden, you know, use my facial recognition to make a payment, there's technology in the background that's always working. And that's only going to get layered with more complexity as you think about, you know, new payment methods being added, new ways of paying, and certainly, you know, consumer behavior continuing to advance. So all of that being said, complexity is going to continue to advance. And really, it requires merchants and PSPs to look at the ecosystem and figure out who do you partner with. Going alone doesn't work because of trying to build your own solutions. You could take years just trying to build one solution, and then it's outdated within five. So it's really important that every company in the ecosystem look at how do you partner with the right companies and what are the solutions they're offering? Where is technology headed? And am I prepared to take advantage of that technology in 5 to 10 years based upon my current systems? And if not, how do we, you know, how do you enable that? Certainly some companies will work that through acquisition. Others will work that through partnerships. And others will work, you know, or may stand on the sidelines till they're forced to make those moves with fear of losing market share. So there's a ton of things coming. I'm excited about where we're headed in the payments industry, specifically in e-commerce. I didn't even touch on, you know, things like cryptocurrency, which we also support. You know, that's down the road as well, and continues to be one of those ways to pay that is controversial to some degree, but certainly there's an element of consumers around the world that are even using crypto. So all of these things need to be taken into consideration when looking at the global e-commerce, global economy of e-commerce, and certainly where we're headed as a world.
Excellent. Well, I certainly agree with you. I think there's certainly a lot of things that the industry and merchant and payment service providers need to keep in mind as the complex just gets even more complex. But Steve, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about PPRO and cross-border e-commerce, and I hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
Ryan, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it, and look forward to speaking with you in the future.